Blog Talk Radio.
You may not be paid for the job.
Oh, and some of you will be
Blog Talk Radio won't let me log out of Jeff Mitchell's program, which is the East Anglian's EDO radio show. They're logging me in as the East Anglian's EDO radio show, and I just noticed that, and I also noticed that I did have a life coach helping me, and she was wonderful, but she was logging me in as East Anglian EDO radio show. Everybody knows that I produce for Jeff Mitchell, so can you bear with me just for a sec? This is, fuck. And everybody take a dram of scotch now. hang on a sec. Oh, damn it, damn it. Okay, where am I? This is really not the way I want to start my program. I'm very, very unhappy. Hang on. I'm going to put you on speaker. Hang on a sec. Because I need two hands to do this. And I'm in for an editing job. And it won't let me sign in. Okay. Damn it. Okay, I'll be right there. Oh, okay. What's going on is it's not recognizing my password now. So I don't know what the hell is going on. I have no studio. I have no chat room. And I have no way of knowing if the person who is filling the boots of the prolific Tim Burton, I don't know what's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be one hell of an audacity job. I'm very frustrated. Can you please bear with me for a second? I don't know what the hell is going on. If I don't have a studio, I cannot bring on the person who's going to fill in for me, for Tim, rather. So hang on. Oh, okay. I think I might have something going on here. Let me get to the studio. Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for this. This is embarrassing. Let's see if it's going to let me in. For crying out loud. And no, I am not in, I have the chat room, but I am not in the chat room. Okay. So, okay, I am not in the chat room. I have the chat room, and I have the studio. So, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not showing up as being in the chat room, but I can see you guys, and I can post. So
Yeah, this is very frustrating because I don't have moderator control, which means if there are troublemakers, I can't kick them, for example. So, yeah, this is frustrating. But all right, you know what? What I'm going to do, I am totally going to take this to Audacity and edit it. And 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Cal Fritzy, and your host, Tim Burton, who is enjoying a rather wonderful and well-deserved vacation. I am so pleased that Tim is enjoying his time in Wales, and he better send me a postcard. It's, you know, when you co-host with somebody and they take off, you know, for a week, you know, in Canada, we would be take off to the great wet north. But no, Tim is enjoying a well-deserved break, and he'll be back next Monday. In the interim, I have somebody joining me right now, and that is my dear friend, Agador, and I would like to welcome Agador to the program. Hi, Agador. How are you today?
I'm fine, Carolyn. How the devil are you?
Oh, well, as usual, I am infidelity fine.
All right, would you like to tell a chicken joke now?
We can do the wonky watch later. We can do the wonky watch a little bit later. I don't think my Tim imitation is quite up to the snuff there, but just trying to make you feel a little bit more comfortable and familiar for today. You know, just you know, make the audience feel a little bit more comfortable. Of course, that probably made them feel really creepy. Sorry, guys. But I hope you're well. I'm doing well. Ready for a show. Ready for action. Yeah. And I want to wish everyone in Canada a happy official observance of Canada Day. Canada Day is actually tomorrow on the 1st, but it's being officially observed today. And you get to pay taxes at the same time. Isn't that great?
Oh, yeah. You know what, Agador? You're just going to love this. I paid over $600 in my quarterly in my property taxes. So yeah, I'm just thrilled. I'm throwing the invoice on the floor, literally. I just love how the government works so damned hard for us. Don't you think they do? Like,
Yeah, that price should include a free stop in a Jiffy Lube, you know, if you're going to have to pay that much. I mean, come on.
You know what? That's probably something that I would pay money for.
Oh, you better believe some people would pay money for it. I know some people would, for sure.
Oh my gosh! But it's really bad in Canada when it comes to taxes. We are so taxed. We're not too bad, but you know, in my jurisdiction, it is rather high, and this is why I want to move out of Dodge some days.
Well, what's the, you know, I've got a question about that. What's the average base income tax rate up there now?
I don't know.
Just ballpark? Oh, okay. All right. Well, no. Because down here in the States, you know,
it's high.
Depending on what state you live in here, you can wind up blowing like 60-70% of your income in taxes, depending on what state you or city you live in. It gets that bad. And I know over in Europe, I was talking to a friend of mine over in Sweden years ago, and he said that the base income tax rate over there is 30%. Well, actually, it was 35%, mm-hmm. and that was oh God, 20 years ago in Sweden, and that was only their base income tax rate. That didn't include any other taxes that they have to pay, which are numerous. I mean, if nothing else, they have to pay a quote unquote value added tax on everything. Do you guys have VAT up there?
Yeah, we do. We do.
What the hell? Okay. Then maybe you can tell me. What the hell is the value that's added? What value is added to it? And why do you have to get taxed for it?
Oh, absolutely. What it is that... It's called big government, and this
yep.
is what I despise about big government, and this is what Barack Hussein Obama is his strivations is towards big government. I am if I were an American, I would be a libertarian and demand small government. We have so many people in our beds as it is, that we do not need more politicians dictating to us how we should be conducting ourselves. And it's disgusting to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, now for anyone who's seriously thinking about voting for Hillary Clinton, I just want them to remember that in the mid-90s, okay, this is part of the advantage of being old, folks. In the mid-90s, Bill Clinton was already beginning to propose a VAT in the United States, a value-added tax. And for everyone in our chat rooms is knowledgeable, so they know what this is, but some living in archives may not. That's basically just an extra tax on top of everything you buy. All right, it's just added on to there. And it's done at every stage of whatever it is you buy, from the producer to the manufacturer to the distributor to the point of sale people. It's taxed all the way down the line, so you can wind up paying up to twice as much for a thing because of this quote unquote value added tax. And as you said, Kel, great catch there. It's all about big government. So, yeah, put Slick Hilly in the White House, and you can probably expect that to come along.
Oh, yeah, and this is what we have to be worrisome about, is big government equates big brother, and this is what I'm trying to avoid. This is why I am rather... happy with our government system. We are pretty much a small government, but big government is in the United States is a different ball of wax altogether.
Oh yeah. I've often said that it really seems like our ever-expanding, ever-growing government is just another sort of welfare. It's almost like workfare, or it's almost like people volunteering and getting welfare, except they just have a government title and that sort of thing. And their welfare is just really, really great and fantastic, and it's welfare that none of the rest of us can get. Very, very similar to the really fantastic health care that Congress, the Senate, and much of the executive branch here gets, because they don't have to go on Obamacare like us plebs.
Absolutely. And I got a BTR coach here. Joining me, and that's Alan. Alan is the best, and he's trying to help me open up my chat box so that I can see everybody. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it might have been better if at the first of the show you played Do the Tighten Up. I don't know what band did that song, but that was a great old song. Talking about tightening things up. I can just tell people that today's show is sort of based on something that I was talking to Kel about some days ago. It's an annoyance that I have when it comes to progressives and Islam, and their view that if we intervene at all in any Islamic countries, it's just going to make them angry with us and create more terrorists. Now, my contention is that Islam itself creates terrorists. We don't have to be involved anywhere for Islamists to attack us as Americans or people from the West or anyone who is not Islamic. Islam in and of itself tells its people to proselytize in every means possible through social and government and kinetic jihad. So all this might have accelerated it a little bit, but we would have been here otherwise. We would have been here anyway. So this notion that somehow we can't be involved anywhere else in the world where anybody is wearing robes or a hijab or something like that because it'll just, quote-unquote, create more terrorists is, quite frankly, ignorant. It's ignorance of the very nature of Islam itself. Islam creates terrorists because terror is one of the methods that Islam uses when it wants to supplant a society with its own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what we were talking about.
And there's actually quite a few issues that we want to discuss tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, my apologies. I'm getting stuff happening here. But there are a lot of things that we want to discuss. And, I'm going to totally ignore the technical glitches going on here because we have a show to conduct. And like I say, Tim Burton is my fellow host, but he's on a well-deserved vacation, and Agador is gracing my studio, and I'm grateful for Agador for filling in for Tim Burton, who will be back next week.
I could try to play my guitar, but I probably wouldn't be very good. Because, number one, it's an electric guitar, and I have no amp, and number two, it's a piece of crap. And number three, I can't play the guitar. So I don't think I'll be quite as good. But, you know, and I can't sing either, so I can't sing, give me that dodgy fatwa. But I think
give me that
enough
dodgy fatwa.
I think we've got enough dodgy fatwas out there as it is. I mean, quite honestly, you know, I love science and I love space travel. Hello, Sue. Love you, baby. Sue's a fellow NASA, NASA head along with me. I love space travel and everything. And my favorite fatwa is the one that says that it is punishable by death for an Islamist to travel to Mars. And that's kind of why I'm in favor of an accelerated space program to get as many Islamists to Mars as possible. Hey, Mars, it's a happy place.
I think that's probably what Tim is doing right now. He's probably sitting around, let me see, he's 5 hours ahead, so let me see, 8:25
in the
evening.
He's
probably sitting around a campfire right now and playing the dodgy fat one. You know what? I remember when I was speaking with him about a month ago. We were going over show notes, and I said to Tim, "What you up to?" And he said, "Oh, I'm babysitting my, you know, four kids." I'm like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, I've got four little rugrats running around me." I said, "Oh, have a hell of a time." He said, "I'll bring out my guitar and I'll play some tunes, you know, to keep them occupied." And I said, "Play the dodgy fatwa. Everything will be all right. And the parents will never bother you again."
Oh, yeah. Just educate the kids about Islam and, you know, the parents will keep them away from them forever, yeah. Oh, no, you know, it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun. We were listening to, Stephen Vandergast's show, Move to the Middle, which I highly recommend. It's on BTR on Thursdays, every other Thursday. And he was, you know, his kids were getting kind of lively and coming into the studio and everything. And he let them say hello. And he had to let everybody go for a few moments and tuck them in bed and things like that. But, it's all part of life. And you know what? They're the ones that we're all doing this crap for. You know, they're the ones, you know, we're not up here for our own egos or anything like that. It's the kids. It's the grandkids, you know. It's all of them that we're trying to do this for, because we the people in our chat room and a lot of the people listening in archives and whatnot all recognize that there is the problem of Islam that is spreading throughout the world, and we have to do something to resolve it. We're the ones out here spreading the alarm so that our kids and our grandkids won't have to do that.
Well, you know what? That's exactly it, is that we have an obligation to protect the our integrity and the integrity of our children.
Oh, yeah. Because we've seen over in the UK, you know, we've listened to people like Sonny England and Tommy English and people like that. We know what's going on in the UK now. In British schools and things like that, what is going on now, and what has gone on in the very recent past with the Islamic scourge, they're already starting to pick out people who are not Islamist and abuse them in the schools. The kids do this, and the administrators let them. So this is an ongoing problem. That's only going to get worse the longer we ignore it. People over here in the States, the same ones that make the statement that I told you about earlier, oh, we just make more terrorists if we confront them, are the ones who are going to have to wake up. They're either going to have to make a whole lot of money and keep their kids in schools with bodyguards, or they're going to get an extremely nasty surprise 10 to 15 years from now. You know, mm-hmm. this problem is not going away. The happy, friendly Islamists of care don't. All right, they're the ones that are putting out the smokescreen and trying to make everything politically correct. And here's an interesting thing, Kel, that I don't think a lot of people know about. Now, I didn't source this, okay? So this may or may not be true. But it wouldn't surprise me at all, given the way our State Department has acted in years past about other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a thing on Facebook that someone in the United States Department of State made a statement that speaking out against Islam might possibly violate their civil rights.
Mm.
And I want everyone to pay attention to that, because That is what we here in the States call a trial balloon. All right, that's when the government, when some agency or someone in the government, kind of throws something out there, you know, into the media, to see what the people think of it, to see whether they buy into it immediately or whether they hate it. excuse me, kind of like, you know, running up the flagpole and see if the cat licks it up, or, you know, pour it in the bowl and see if anybody salutes.
the cat licks it up. Okay.
It's that kind of thing, you know. It's sort of like advertising for policy. But
yeah,
you can tell the policy they're after is blasphemy laws. It's not about civil rights, people. We are about civil rights. These policies are about blasphemy laws. They're about saying if you say anything, write anything, or broadcast anything that is negative about Islam, we're going to put you in jail. And again, I say this to my American friends, and to an extent this is already going on in Canada. You know, this is headed our way. It's already there in the United Kingdom. Tim, who normally does this job, had to go through considerable time and considerable expense to avoid being sent to jail for 6 months just for putting out a couple of tweets.
It would have been longer than 6 months that Tim Burton would have been facing. And it's weird referring to him as Tim Burton because he's just Tim. To me. But, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you know that my co-host and my fellow host, actually, is Tim Burton, who is on a well-deserved vacation. And you know that he was subject to Islamic complaints and that he endured a trial. He was acquitted, but had he been convicted, it probably would have been longer than 6 months there, Agador.
Well, and let's not forget the personal expense that he went through. I mean, we're talking about thousands of pounds here that he had to spend just to keep himself out of jail. And this was
all the lawyer fees. Yeah.
Yeah. This
absolutely.
Was all over a few tweets. That's really what it was. What it was like, two or three tweets. And that's all that he did, and one person took offense. Of course, the tweets were at that one person, and that's all that was necessary. That's all that was necessary. These blasphemy laws that they're trying to get instated, quite frankly, throughout the world, are the first thing we have to fight against in the many, many things we have to fight against when it comes to Islam, and there are a lot of them. Because there are so many horrific things that this ideology tries to force on people, and we have to fight it on so many levels. But the blasphemy laws, at least in my opinion, are the most important because they're the ones that would keep people from, like you and me, Kel, from broadcasting the truth about what Islam is and raising the alarm.
Yeah. This is a very frightening. These are very terrifying times, I think. And I don't think I am an alarmist. I think that I'm very truthful. And when I say that we have to be very, very mindful of the territory that we are treading in right now, especially with the unleashing of ISIS, which is the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, we have to be very, very mindful that there are entities out there that are interested in nothing more than harming us and our children and our grandchildren. This is why Agador does what he does. This is what I do. I'm Kel Fritzy. This is what Jeff Mitchell does. This is what Tim Burton does. And, you know, I'm kind of taking this personally now, Agador, because I've had a few people affected by the Islamic reach, and, of course, Tim Burton being one of them. And he's my fellow host, and he was taken to task. And I really take personal offense to that. And I take personal offense to people like Ezra Levant and Mark Stein being taken to task. And these are both Canadians. And
I have spoken with Ezra Levant and Mark Stein personally, and just to know what they're going through, what they went through fighting. Like Ezra Levant, he lost his magazine publication. That was the Western Standard, because the Islamists broke him. And this is another thing that we have to be aware of. It's the civilizational jihad, the legal jihad. And this is exactly what they threw at Tim Burton. And I will not get over that ever, because Tim is my friend. And I'll be damned if I sit down and sit quietly and let this get away.
You know what, Kel? I had a... I was having a think about ISIS and about CARE. Just now, that's the whole spectrum of jihad right there. The happy, friendly Islamists that come on and say, oh, you know, they dress in the nice business suits and things, and they come on the air and say, oh, there's nothing to all this Islamophobia. You know, we just all want to live with everybody in peace. And then on the other end, you have ISIS, who are out there acting a lot like the wild dogs that Holger mentioned in his great show that he had over the weekend, Holger Awakens on Blog Talk Radio. And it occurs to me that if anyone doubts the veracity of what we say, that Islam is an ideology of hate and abuse, all they have to do is look at this spectrum, because If they were smart, if they were intelligent about this, they would just allow the CARE people to lull everyone into a false sense of security, and they wouldn't start anything until there were an overwhelming number of Islamist legislators and other officials in a country enough to completely overwhelm everyone, and then bam, suddenly there's Sharia law. And they wouldn't have to involve themselves in any of these terrorist acts. Now, excuse me, I think the reason why they involve themselves in these terrorist attacks all over the world, you know, not just ISIS, but Boko Haram, Hamas, you know, even Islamic Jihad, remember them?
You
know, all of those people, they engage in it because Islam feeds the worst instincts in human beings, the instincts to abuse, the instincts to hate, the instincts to maim, the instincts to murder. Islam is the open door for all of that, because it gives it an excuse. Well, sure, I can rape that woman. She's kafir, and I'm a devout Muslim. That's behind it all.
That's exactly it.
And that is really why we have to do what we can. I'm totally with Mike Holt. We have to do what we can to just get Islam off the planet, not just out of our country.
Well, it's got to be eradicated, because it is not compatible with the West, for one. And two, it is... It's an ideology. It's a political ideology that is comprised of inbred idiots, and I say that in you know kind of tongue in cheek. But Islam is an entity upon itself that is beyond reason, and we do not want the Sharia courts. We do not want the Sharia law. We do not want the subjugation of women and children and animals. We do not want that. But this is what we're inviting if we do not take control of it right now. And this frightens me, though, that Islam is getting a pass. We have to find Islam to be a political entity and not a religion. It's not a religion. It's a political entity. And I don't understand. Agador, I don't understand.
understand their ambitions. Like, why is it that they cannot coexist with other religions? And, oh, well, you know, other religions, and you know what I mean by that. Why is it that they cannot coexist with other entities? Why is it that they are determined to kill us? Why are they slaughtering each other, the Shiite and the Sunni? What is going on with them? I don't understand.
Well, yeah, as I said, it's an ideology that appeals to and validates the worst the worst aspects of the human personality. So, sure, you've got, I mean, apart from the varying types of jihad against us, against people who are not Islamic,
mm-hmm.
They seem to reserve a special kind of hate for other Islamists that happen to disagree about one small aspect of their religion. Even, you know, I get this feeling that even if they did manage to take over the world and create a complete caliphate, eventually there wouldn't be anyone left because
yeah.
they would because they would just kill each other off because of these minor sectarian differences. You know,
oh yeah, exactly.
And this, Kel, is very important. This is where the argument, well, Christians are just as bad, is exploded. Christians got over.
Oh well, you know, I'm really getting sick and tired of that old argument, and that, oh well, look what the Christians did, and oh my favorite old chestnut is, well, look at the Crusades. Oh, give me a bloody break. We were reactionaries. Okay. Let me stop myself and address the Christianity. They always go back to the Old Testament. We revised our Testament. We follow the King James Version of the New Testament, and we do not abide by, fire and brimstone. We endorse the heart of Jesus Christ within our souls. Okay, you guys know I'm a practicing Christian. You guys know that. I go to church and all that. And I do not believe that when they throw that argument in my face, it is a moot point with me. But another thing that we don't do is that we don't believe in the fire and brimstone. Of course not. But one thing that really bothers me is the caliphate and how these people, Mike Holt tells me not to say Quranimals because he always tells me I'm insulting animals. But they will never have resolution. They will never have resolution because they are so embedded in that ideology that they will... Muhammad was an asshole. Okay, let's put it that way. Because the guy couldn't even leave a will. You know, the pedophile couldn't even leave a will of succession. And I tell you, Agador, I just go nuts sometimes over that.
Well, that's part of it. And look, you know, they'll point out more recent problems that Christians have had. And the difference is that in almost every event, we've managed to resolve those issues. Christianity has had more than one reformation since its inception.
Oh yeah,
and the few times that there have been problems involving violence, they've been resolved within a few years. These things that are going on between, for instance, the Sunnis and the Shiites, you know, as far as the Islamist goes, have been going on for centuries. And they can't seem to resolve it. We've all of us, Christians,
yeah.
You know, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, you know, people who practice the Indian religions, the Native American Indian religions here, all of us have decided, you know what we're going to do? We do have our religious differences, but we're going to live together in a secular society under secular governments that allow us to practice our religions and do harm to none.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And we're
going to
be fine. We're going to live in peace.
Yeah, and what Tim Burton says is, Tim Burton apprised me of this, and I was not aware of this until he brought it up on a program a while back, and that we follow the golden rule. They do not, and they do not recognize man-made law. We need man-made laws to make our societies work, and we cooperate under these man-made laws. I am so sick and tired of these Mohammedans that insist on being tried in Canada or the United States or in the UK under Sharia law. We have got to insist that Sharia law be abolished. We have to insist that Islam be declared a political entity and stop with the protectionism under religious status that it is enjoying. Like, look at these organizations. Oh my God, Ecuador. We got the Council of American Islamic Relations. We have the Muslim Student Association, which was established, I believe, 1963, around there. And look how the infiltration has taken off. Look how they are the world religion, or the world religion textbook being circulated in Florida. An entire chapter devoted to Islam, and barely a word on Christianity. Judea.
Yeah, I think maybe Luchadora might be able to correct us on this one, but I think Christianity in that book had like 6 pages. I think that's all that was devoted to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, I mean, organizations too numerous to mention. Of course, this is part of civilization jihad. This isn't the kinetic jihad that everyone sees and everyone worries about. This is actually, everyone who isn't a monster hates it when people are killed and maimed. But quite frankly, when it comes to the long-term effects of Islam, the even worse jihad is the one waged by people like CARE and the Islamic Students Association, all of these.
Yeah.
That's the worst one, because all you have to do is look at the Middle East, and you can see the kind of enslavement that the people would be under if these people are allowed to influence, good intentioned people in our countries. And there are many of those. I try to appeal, honestly, to progressives, which I don't agree with on anything else, when it comes to Islam, because they're the first ones to try and defend Islam. And I try and appeal to them and tell them the basic truth that, if there is a caliphate, every progressive advance that they've gained in over 100 years of work is going to go right out the window. That's just going to happen almost immediately. And if they don't believe me, all they have to do is look over at the Middle East and see how the people live there, see how women live there, see how gays live there, see how anyone who is not Islamic lives there. So.
And we have a guest joining us, Agador, and I believe this is Michael Green. And Michael, hello.
Hey, Kel. How are you this afternoon?
How are you?
And, I'm doing well, thanks. And how are you, Agador?
I'm great, Mike. You can call me Agador. You can call me Dave. My name is Dave Milner. I am the Unpleasant Blind Guy. Greetings to you.
Don't call
and welcome.
Him late for supper.
You're darn right.
Okay.
But, Michael, you've been listening for quite a while, and I'm wondering, what is your take In particular, I want to ask you, Michael, it's great, you know, it's always great to hear your voice, by the way, Michael. But issues of Islam in the West, how do we convince our governments that we have to eradicate it?
I don't think there's any real hope in convincing politicians of anything in particular, especially liberal Democrats, politicians who are way on the left or even somewhat not so extreme to the left, but people with that type of mindset. We're not going to turn their hearts and minds. Only God can do that. That's the reality of it. It's a waste of time. We can educate people who are not aware of the threat and the problem and hope that they wake up, and that might motivate them to elect the proper candidates who will be willing to take on this battle, because it is a battle on two fronts, of course. There's the physical war being waged by Muslim jihadists, and there's the stealth jihad.
Yeah. Well, it's the, the stealth jihad is, it's been there since 1928 when the Muslim Brotherhood was created for one. But it's the population jihad as well. I remember when Khomeini said, the Ayatollah Khomeini, he was quite a wiggy little character there when, Iran fell to jihad, and that was in 1979. But we're going to be overrun by the population because they breed like rabbits.
Well, I mean, they're encouraged to have a lot of children. And the purpose of them having large families is that with the hope that they will outnumber non-Muslims. And Western governments facilitate this by having a program in place that allows them to get different kinds of benefits, housing assistance, cash assistance, and assistance in purchasing food. So as long as they can use the system to their advantage, and they're doing it, have been doing it very effectively, that situation will never abate. Muslim immigration is continuing in Western nations. There's no effort to curtail it. And realistically speaking, the Muslims that live in the borders of Western nations, we have to be honest, they're not going to be expelled. It's just not going to happen. Not that I foresee any foreseeable future that something of that nature will happen. It's a serious problem. There's no solution.
Well,
that you can't really put your finger on it and say, okay.
Oh, I know.
You know,
it's a
multifaceted problem.
There's no magic
bullet.
It's amazing.
Bullet. No. Yep.
There's no magic bullet.
Michael, I so totally agree with that. What shocks me is that a Mohammedan can have a male Mohammedan can have four wives, and what they're doing is that they're emigrating to the Western countries, and they bring the first wife over, and that's fine and dandy, you know, set up shop, set up your taxi stands, whatever. But then they sponsor a sister or a cousin or whatever, and we know that that's the second and third wife, and then all of a sudden the aunt is sponsored over, and we know that's the fourth wife, and what happens is that they go on the welfare rolls as single mothers, and this man is capable of producing shahid via each Muslima. Maybe three children from one woman, four children from another woman. This is, they're propagating. This is what they do. And this is you know, this is what we are facing at this point, is it's the propagation rates, and it's driving me absolutely crazy, and that this is how they're going to defeat us. They're going to defeat us by numbers. It's going to be civilizational jihad, and they are going to get the vote. That's exactly what's going to happen. And Agador, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't think that I don't think the situation is quite as hopeless as Mike might believe, but we do have an uphill battle. You know, I mean, I think he's being realistic, and I like that. But yes, we're going to have to go after not just preach to the choir, to people, to conservatives and people like that. We're going to have to go after the main people who defend Islam. And yes, that means we're going to have to appeal to the progressives and just tell them, look, you know, we may not agree on other things, but if you allow this to continue, you know, everything you've worked for is going to be down the drain. You have to realize this. You have to open your eyes. You have to look beyond the borders of our countries, the United States and Canada and the UK, wherever, and you have to recognize what Islamists will do if they are allowed to grow in population and bring in a caliphate. I think it is the only way that we can effectively fight this is from that angle, because if we can do that, if we can begin to turn progressives against Islam, not against individual Islamists themselves, but if we can begin to turn progressives against Islam, the ideology, that is where there is some hope for us. Because if we can't do that, then yes, I think Mike's quite correct. There won't be a way to stop it. But that is the key.
Well, absolutely. And you know that the caliphate won't be won by the sword. And Muammar al-Gaddafi, he said, it won't be won by the sword. It will be won by the womb. And that is the population.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael, when you hear things like that, you know, war is being won by the womb, this must give you chills up your spine, because you work with wounded warriors, and you see the results of what happens to them when they come home. And Michael, when you see their efforts being futile, this must just totally disturb you.
Well, the level of savagery in the behavior of violent jihadists, it's extreme. And it's a representation that they are devoid and completely bankrupt of the kind of values that human beings, you know, should have, and that a large percentage of the human race does. But that they're stripped away because they see the non-Muslim as a non-human being, you know, an infidel,
yeah,
or a kufar.
Mm-hmm.
So the non-believers are the vilest thing to Muhammad. That's kind of a paraphrase from the Quran. And, of course, the Quran is filled with verses and statements that non-Muslims are considered by the, you know, practicing and faithful, devoted Islamists as filthy, dirty kuffar.
Yeah.
And therefore, to perpetrate any kind of act of physical violence upon them is acceptable. And then, of course, there are these Quranic commands, you know, to strike them at the neck, smite them at the neck. That's, you know, beheading people, decapitation. That's why Muslims decapitate humans, because it's in the Quran, not because they just arbitrarily chose that method of executing or killing a person. But yeah, I've seen what war does to human beings physically and mentally, emotionally. and it's a very serious situation. And they've killed more Muslims in a way than they've killed non-Muslims. That's the truth.
And oh yeah, absolutely. They are more than happy to kill each other back and forth. Yeah.
They've slaughtered.
Sorry, Mike.
Sure, they've slaughtered countless numbers of Afghan civilians, and they still do to this day. And of course, in the Middle East, you look at the death and destruction, and then look in Pakistan. These are the main theaters of war where Islamist terrorists are active, killing human beings and, physically abusing them, torturing them, and so forth. And it's just representative of what Islam is about. But, the left will never admit it. I have had many debates in person and, through the Internet with people on the left about this subject. So I'm not that optimistic. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a pessimist today, but I don't know if we're going to be able to make them see it. I think it might take some horrific things might have to manifest, and they might wake up. But then again, they might not, because after 9/11, a lot of political leaders, even President Bush, went around saying that Islam was really a religion of peace.
And we saw this, by the way. Sorry, Mike, I don't want to step on you, but by the way, with the murder of Lee Rigby. Lee Rigby is hacked to death on the streets of London, and what does David Cameron do? He comes out and says, "Oh well, these people didn't really represent Islam." What did the judge do at their trial before he sentenced them? He said, "Oh, you are not representing Islam at all." And here's the kicker, guys. Those monsters stood up in the dock and said, "Yes, we are representing Islam. We're doing exactly what Islam has told us to do." And this brings me back to what you were saying, Mike, about the attacks and whatnot. There is going to be a problem in talking to progressives about this, partly because they follow some of the tenets of things like Rules for Radicals. Now, let me just get this in, Kelly, before we I know
you
it's
bet,
the top of
bet.
The hour. Let me just get this in. One of the tenets of Rules for Radicals and even political correctness is you have to dehumanize people you disagree with. Okay, if the person you disagree with is a human, then you might feel bad on a conscious level for doing something to harm them. But if you dehumanize them, it becomes okay to make them a laughingstock. It becomes okay to deprive them financially of anything and impoverish them. It becomes okay to physically attack them. It becomes okay to murder them because they're no longer human. And I think this similarity between progressivism and Islam is one of the bigger blocks that we're going to have to overcome. I'm not as pessimistic as Mike is. I think there is still hope to do that, but it's not going to be an easy road, not by any measure. Back to you guys.
I just want to say that, when David Cameron came out the next morning after the murder of Lee Rigby and said that, that this is not Islam. Well, the two Michael, I call them the two Michaels because, Adebola Joe and Adebola Wally, they said it had everything to do with Islam. And for him to come out the very next morning and say it had nothing to do with Islam just disgusted me. And when the judge, in his sentencing, said that you do not represent Islam, they got really upset, and they started shouting and saying, "Yeah, this is Islam. This is what we do. We are of a calling, and we will slaughter those that tread on Islam." And this is what they did. And Lee Rigby being pulled down in the street and being dragged into it and being virtually beheaded, that is Islam. That is your Islam. And I thought for sure this would be enough to wake people up in the UK. So far, it's not been working. They're dealing with Islamic grooming gangs. I call them the rape gang, as does DJ Dave and
me.
Jeff, and you, yep. You, Agador, absolutely. And I think that there is a time that has to be met in which we deal with Islam for the final time, and that is we have to engage in a crusade. And I'm going to take a bit of a break, gentlemen, because we are above the top of the hour, and as you know, I like for everybody to refresh their coffees and teas, and let's take a bit of a break, and we'll see everybody back here in 4 minutes. Hang on. And welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy, and I have two fine gentlemen joining me today. Agador has taken time out of his day to co-host with me in light of my fellow host, Tim Burton, is enjoying a very much well-deserved vacation. We also have Michael Green on the line with us as well. But we want to thank everybody that joins us. Michael Green, Agador, thank you both for being here. I want to thank Sweet Sue from New Mexico. And, of course, I always want to thank people that join us in the chat room. You guys also go out of your otherwise busy day to spend with us. And that includes Bigfoot, Dodgy Dave. We have some guests here, and one of those guests is Terry. We want to thank our very own Luchadora, Paul Alexander, and my sweet Poppy from across the sea, who lives too far away from me, and that makes me sad, but it makes me glad when I see her in the chat room. So, and we want to thank everybody that listens in archive, and we know you do, because you guys make it worth mine and Tim's effort to do this show. And, of course, mine and Agador's and mine and Michael Green's effort to do this program. We are talking about the issues of Islam, of course. I am a counter-jihadist, and I am determined to see it eradicated. I know that there are those out there that will say that it won't happen. Well, I have faith that we can get together and eliminate it. We have somebody here on the line. He keeps dropping in and out, he or she. I'm going to bring them on and see who they are, because I tried to contact him or her. And 0240, hi, what's your name and what's your comment?
Hello?
Hello.
Can
Welcome
you hear
to
me?
The program. Yes?
My name is John. I'm from California.
Hi. Welcome to the program.
27 years old. Hi. So I've been having some problems with Islam lately. You know, I've been noticing all the mis problems. And 9/11 was an inside job by the United States of America, and Islam is not tricks. Americans are dirty, and you do not belong in this world. Islam is master race.
Yeah, now I want you guys to listen to this very closely, okay? Because this is what's represented right here, okay?
Islam
I want you to listen to this guy very closely.
9/11 was an inside job, and it's very obvious.
Okay. Everybody on the left needs to listen to this guy.
Right. Thank you for a caller.
Okay, John.
Caller, thank you for confirming.
Very...
Thanks for confirming what we already know.
Inside job.
Okay. Do you live in America? Do you live
yes,
in America?
Yeah.
He claims
he's from California.
Well, that's interesting. He benefits from our country, but yet he hates us.
Yeah.
Well, again, guys, this is exactly what we were talking about in the first hour. Okay.
Yeah.
This is okay.
Islam is master race.
Anyone
Muslims are not a race. Go to a dictionary.
Islam is master race.
One at a
anyone,
time.
Islam is master race. Islam is master race.
Anyone remember what Anjan Chowdhury said?
Islam is master race. Islam is master race. Islam is master race.
Is that all you can
Islam
say?
Islam is master race.
Don't you have anything
Islam,
else to say, sir?
Dirty Americans. I know I live in your country, but it's
hey,
a piece of
can,
shit.
John,
I will,
can you, do, can you do me a favor? Can you let your friends know that I'm live on the air so that they control the shows? Because it boosts my ratings. I really appreciate the
call back
calls.
Soon again. Please call back again.
Goodbye.
You guys are a bunch of fucking Americans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Call back after you've drank some more camel urine, okay? You know, because frankly, you know, we're listening to your Islam is master race stuff and all this other kind of stuff. You sound like a Nazi. Please, yeah, yeah. Do please call back because the progressives in our countries call us the Nazis, and all you're doing is proving that the Islamists are the Nazis. So we really appreciate your call there, doggy. Did I say doggy? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Doggies are unclean. I apologize.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that Muslims love to proclaim some type of racial status. But, you know, this person's not very educated. Hopefully he's still listening. I'm going to try to educate you now.
Race. What the
Would you do me a
that?
Favor? Sir, go get a dictionary, Merriam-Webster or Oxford Dictionary, if you can read. I don't know how literate you are because you kept repeating the same thing like a broken record. But please go and pick up a dictionary and look under the world races and show me where Islam or Muslims are actually a race.
Well, that's a good
point,
Mike. That's a good point, Mike. And let me just interject this too. They call themselves, they're trying to call themselves a race because they're trying to make sure that, again, that people keep on treating them like a race. Oh, a race. Oh, if you're against Islam, you must be a racist. But no, that's a great point. And I want everybody, I want everybody else to do that or to start saying that. Yeah, Mike, say that again for everybody.
Well, listen, would everybody listening, would you please pick up a dictionary? You can use a Merriam-Webster or Oxford, two of the more well-known dictionaries, and do some research and find where it actually there's a textbook definition that defines Islam or Muslims as some type of race.
Boom.
This person is clearly an imbecile.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he's an imbecile.
And
he's the poster boy. He's the poster boy of the week for Islamo-Nazism, because Nazism and Islam have much in common. So thanks again for letting us know that you people really are just a bunch of Nazis.
Yeah,
now, they might think being a Nazi is a positive thing. Agador, you think this guy thinks that Nazis are good?
I'll bet you anything in the world, Mike, that dude has a swastika flag hanging up someplace. He probably thinks it's definitely a positive thing. And I'm actually grateful that he called in because it confirms everything that we said in the first hour.
I think
he's got a big
portrait of Hitler, too, that he salutes every night.
The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem comes to mind.
There you go, Kel.
He was a nice man.
Yeah, he loved the good old Nazis. So, hey, you know.
Well, you know what? California's got a lot of nuts. They call California, no disrespect to anybody who lives there, but they call it the land of fruits and nuts. And he confirms that.
Well, he definitely confirms the nuts part. I got nothing against gays, but hey, you know who does have something against gays? Islam. And this guy proves it. I mean, he was wonderful.
He had his 3 minutes of fame.
He did, yeah.
he had his 3 minutes of fame. It's okay.
Yeah, that's all right though. You know what? It's an open line program, and
it's fine.
Anybody can call
in. You should welcome.
I tried to vet him.
Yeah.
You know when you try to vet these callers.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, because they when you're vetting them, they're like, oh yes, I just want to make a comment about the topic, the subject matter. And
it's what
so
I
you're
did.
Like, okay. So
yeah, I was waiting for the
hold.
Death threat.
And then they just
show up. I was waiting for the death threat, but he didn't make a death threat.
Well, we didn't let him on long enough to
yeah,
to
he probably would have made a death threat.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
one
would've.
Thing they love to do. They love to make death threats.
Well, they even did that with who was it that called the Islamic Center, Kel? Help me out here. Ned, yeah. They even did that with Ned. This guy was like, where are you in the United States?
Yeah. Oh, Ned, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they can't, guys, this is it. They can't help themselves. I mean, Islam is such an ideology of hate. They can't help themselves from from spreading that hate, either through word or through violence. And that's why we haven't, you know, we haven't just had the smooth jihadists like the ones in CAIR. That's why we have Boko Haram. That's why we have ISIS. That's why we have, you know, all of the others. Yeah. There you go. They can't resist.
No, because
I know.
Yeah, it's really a demonic. There's a lot of demonic activity with these people too. They for those that believe in, the devil and God, and they have demonic possession. Some of them, it's unfortunate.
It's certainly a mindset. That's for sure. I wanted to. I have two fine gentlemen joining me here today, and we the theme. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. The theme of the program is that we are dealing with terrorism on a large scale, and Islamic crimes against America and the globe, and that includes those created in Canada and the UK and the West in general. But Agador, you brought me a very, very, very fine article. And look at this timeline. Okay, we know that Islamic atrocities have been going on since, the 14,
Islam?
No, the 1400, you know. Yeah. It's been going on, I mean, it's been going on since the 7th century. And it's reached the 1400s, it's reached the 21st century. It's just insanity. They have been stuck on stupid since the 7th century. But look at what happened in 1920, Agador. September 16th, New York City. TNT bomb planted in unattended horse-drawn wagon exploded on Wall Street opposite the House of Morgan, killing 35 people and injuring hundreds more. Bolshevists or anarchist terrorists believed to be responsible, but the crime has never been solved. And then we move into 1975, New York City again. There is a bomb set off in the historic Front Tavern. It killed 4 people and injured more than 50 people. Puerto Rican national groups, FALN, claimed responsibility,
yes.
And police tied 13 others to the bombing. We have, it just goes on and on. The terrorist attacks against the United States is unbelievable. Of course, we are all familiar with 9-1-1, 9-11, 2011, 2001. We know all about that one. We have seen terrorist attacks, Islamic terrorist attacks globally. We saw what they did during 7/7. Like we know that they are so totally capable of damage. We know what they did in Spain. We know what they did in Breslin. We know what they tried to attempt in Canada, i.e. the Toronto 19. We are totally aware that there is threat out there. But America has always been under attack, and I am quite frankly tired of it. But I do have something here I want to share with you, and this is a two-minute soundbite. People, please listen to this.
Time for an unpleasant blind guy, conservative bite. Each year, on September the 11th, British patriots gather at the United States Embassy in London to stand in solidarity with the American people in remembrance for the lives lost in the terrorist attacks on the United States of America on that day. The attacks Americans have come to call 9/11. In 2005, bombs were exploded in London, killing 52 people and injuring 700. British people call these bombings 7/7. I'm suggesting that in solidarity with the people of the United Kingdom, in remembrance of the lives lost in the 7/7 bombings, people wait until the evening of July the 7th and then light 7 lights. This can be 7 firework rockets, 7 candles, or 7 lights of any other kind, possibly arranged in a display. I'm also suggesting that those who participate record what they do and post it to the internet as a further public display of their solidarity with the British people and with all those who have lost loved ones through the actions of those who follow the ideology of hate that is Islam. So join me on July the 7th this year and in years to come and mark 7 on 7/7. This has been an Unpleasant Blind Guy Conservative Bites.
And there you go. And I want to thank you, Agador, for putting that together. It is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you for playing it, Kelly.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, that soundbite is being played on various radio programs, and I'm glad to see that as well. But I do have a burning question, and I want to ask Michael Green about this. Michael, you work with the troops. You work with wounded warriors, and I'm wondering, how do you feel about sending out more of our men and women into theaters of war? Do you think at this point we're just sending them out into a field of slaughter?
There's different pardon me, there's different ways to address your question. The first thing I have to say is that the type of governments that are in control of our military in the U.S. or Canada or the U.K. are not the kind of leadership we want if we're going to, you know, bring men and women or men and women for any Western nation, you know, to fight these people. It's a difficult situation because leftist governments will put too many restrictions on our fighting forces.
Thank you.
And thereby will get them maimed and killed. We've seen that in Afghanistan, especially since Obama took over in 2009. A large number of deaths, those that were killed in action, actually that are still being killed. Four U.S. Marines died in Afghanistan in the past 10 days, and scores, a massive number, catastrophically wounded. You can directly relate to what's called the rules of engagement, which govern the conduct of those who are there to, you know, to fight on the battlefield. So in that context, of course, I'm opposed to deploying ground troops and, you know, tying their hands behind their back. At the same time, there is a dilemma because if we look to Iraq, we have a terrorist army. It's not a terrorist group anymore, ISIS, which has become a standing army. They don't have the assets, of course. They don't have air power or larger military assets, thank God, at this time. But they are a standing army. No, not yet. They consist of a minimum of 10,000 fighters, and they're pretty well armed in small arms. So they got that capability. And they have to be taken out. There's no question or doubt about it, because if they're allowed to continue, you know, what they're trying to do, which is to capture more land and territory, and they want to hold that territory and, of course, implement the Sharia, now they're calling for all Muslims under control
in the areas where they are controlling to swear allegiance to the caliphate, Baghdadi. So they recently identified him as the caliphate. How many Sunni Muslims worldwide will recognize him as a legitimate caliphate is questionable, but I would say there's enough of them, and they have a very professional, and I got to be honest, you know, well-run marketing and promotional campaign that's being disseminated through social media.
Oh, he's right about that, yeah.
Yeah, and they have that together, and that's assisting them greatly in recruiting more and more jihadis to their ranks. So it's a serious problem. People could say, well, let Iran deal with it because, you know, it's kind of sectarian in a way, and, you know, the Iranians are Shia, and they're backing the Maliki government. And they promised to assist the Maliki government, whatever type of weapons of war they can provide, and, of course, fighters on the ground. But I wouldn't sit back and say, okay, let's just watch this slugfest and hope that the Shias prevail. And, of course, they're not much better either in certain ways, although the real global jihadists at this time are Sunni Muslims. They are not Shias. The Iranian government's a theocracy, and, of course, they desire nuclear weapons, which at this stage it looks like they'll probably acquire. So they do pose a great threat to Israel and to the West. But we have to address the imminent and immediate threat, and that's this, you know, Islamist terrorist group. So, but at this time, it doesn't seem that any Western nation is going to step up and try to do anything to take them down. The Iraqi army has basically collapsed. Four divisions, which is approximately 30,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't all cowards, you know. We have to look at the facts. A lot of the commanders deserted their positions, and they therefore, you know, hey, if your commander deserts and you're a soldier and you've been trained to follow orders, then there's a high probability that you're going to do the same. So that's really what happened on the ground there when a small number of ISIS fighters, I think 800 to 1,000, you know, came, and then all these Iraqi soldiers, you know, did that. So the Iraqi army is ineffective, and it's collapsed. So they need help from another nation to militarily defeat these people, and that would be Iran. The problem is where America and other Western nations not stepping in militarily, it takes the Maliki government and shifts them over to Iran, and that's the last thing we want. You know, it all started back when Obama pulled out all American forces. He should have.
Oh, yeah.
He could have done is he could have fought hard to get what's called the Status of Forces Agreement. And if he had been successful, and I think he could have been, then we would have kept 20,000 troops in Iraq. And I can guarantee you that ISIS would have never manifested. They never would have been able to do what they did. We got to look at the facts. We can sit here and debate for the next 100 years whether we should have gone to Iraq. I think we have to move past that and say, okay, what did America do in Iraq, though? I mean, did we take down the insurgency? We did in Ramadi, in Fallujah, in Mosul. You know, I have friends who fought in those battles. I'm not anybody special, but I do. And so I have been given an inside look, you know, from knowing people who are on the ground there, what our forces did. And, you know, they took these people down.
Well,
so
when we
left Iraq in 2011, the Al-Qaeda Sunni insurgency was practically, you know, defunct. We took them out in large part.
And what Mike says is true. I want to cover this too, because I say this all the time.
Yeah,
okay?
I want you to expand on that, please.
Okay. Yeah. Because I'm always talking about this rules of engagement. This is one of my pet peeves. This has been going on since Vietnam. Okay. But in the case of Iraq, it's been even worse. I mean, you've got people that Iraq and Afghanistan. You've got commanders on the ground that. You know, don't attack a position until they call some weenie at the White House. I mean, you can't win that way. But when you untie our military's hands, American, Canadian, you know, British, anybody, when you untie their hands and let their commanders work and let their commanders wage real war instead of fooling around, they are going to be victorious. Mike is quite correct. When people are allowed to do their jobs in the military, which is to conduct war, they will win. But that that is what has to be done. If we're going to do anything, we have to damn well take the gloves off. And yes, Mike is also correct in that I don't believe that that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is we're going to see a situation. I don't know if anyone else remembers this this picture, and it's kind of odd that this is coming from the Unpleasant Blind guy, but I do remember this. The picture of the people at the American embassy in Saigon, in Vietnam, and the last helicopters leaving.
That's a horrifying photograph.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look, the problem is not to cut anybody off, but when you go to war, you have to stay the course. You know, World War II was different because we were fighting a standing army, and it was a different type of ideology. I mean, we're fighting fascism and Nazism. But we maintained a strong military presence in those countries, and we had to. And, you know, we were able to turn it around in Japan. We turned it around in Germany. That's not going to happen here. Nation building doesn't work in the Arab world or, the Muslim world. So we're not there to do nation building. That's a mistake that George Bush made and a great mistake that Obama made. So it's not about nation building. It's about seeking out the enemy and destroying them and degrading their ability to wage physical jihad, and that can be done. Now people will say, "Well, the more of them you kill, the more you're going to recruit." You can't sit back and worry about that because, like you said appropriately in the beginning of the program, they don't need a reason to hate us. They hate us anyway for who we are and for who they are. That's a false argument, and it goes nowhere.
I'll equate this real quick, Mike. I'll equate this to you know, just a regular fight on the street. All right, if you fight someone and you know, just hit them a couple of times, then they're going to be able to get up again and hit you back. But if you give them a good solid beat down to where they can't even move, they're done. You can walk away then, and they're going to think twice before they approach you again. And you're right. That's what we have to do when we go into these countries is we have to beat the enemy down so hard that they have practically zero resources, practically zero people, and you know, they may still have the motivation to do something, but it's going to be a long time before they do, because the last time we came in and just beat the guts out of them. And yes, I know that's a very warlike stance to take, but when you make war, that's what you have to do. As Richard Marchenko once wrote, war is not nice.
Right. No, war. You know, war is not pretty. It's not polite. It's graphic. It's brutal. It's horrific in many ways, but it's necessary, because the only way to neutralize this type of enemy is you must kill them, and you must kill as many of them as possible, and you have to bring the fight to them. You know, that's one thing. There are things about George Bush that I wasn't crazy about.
Absolutely.
But one thing, the Bush doctrine was the right doctrine, and Bush was, we're going to bring the fight to you. And we did bring the fight to them.
I have a question.
You have to bring the fight to them. You can't sit back and say, we'll just wait and see what happens.
I have a question that I want both of you fine gentlemen to address. And what happened during what brought America? Ladies and gentlemen, I am Kel Fritzy. I am in Canada. My two fine gentlemen joining me are from the United States of America, and that is Michael Green and Agador. When World War II, when the United States, when they were forced into fighting in World War II, that was because the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, right? Now, what they did is that they established Japanese internment camps. Okay, we are at war today. And it's not because we declared war, it's because Islam declared war on us. Do you think that the Mohammedan internment camps would be an ideal to deal with this entity that has infiltrated our Western countries? And Michael, I want you to address that first, and then after you address it, I want Agador to address that.
No, I don't think that's a good idea, because the Japanese situation was different, and
I mean, it was also understood that these people would remain in those camps until the war was finished, and, you know, the war was finished, and, you know, we're dealing with people who are fanatics and are motivated and inspired by a really sick, demented ideology, a fascist supremacist ideology that has a divine calling. And that's the most dangerous enemy that you want to face, you know, for obvious reasons. I'm not an advocate of that. You know, what to do with the Muslims that are in the Western nations is a very involved situation, and, you know, how to deal with them and what's going to happen in reality, because we talked about that earlier. I'm not an advocate of that kind of situation at this time. I would think more that Islam should not be given a status as a religion, and therefore that will take the wind out of the sails. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Maybe
it would happen, but that's the first thing, is to declassify it, because, as we all know, it has the protections of any so-called religion. You know, I once was doing some research, and if you just go on the Internet and look up the definition of religion, it says some type of benevolent ideology, you know, that has the connection with God. There's nothing benevolent about Islam. So,
and Agador, what is your take on that?
All right. Well, Mike did hit the nail on the head. Read the Japanese and the World War II connection. And that whole thing, I'll expand on it to say to this point, that whole thing required that we apologize for doing that at all, which we should have. We shouldn't have done that in the first place. You know, just because a person looks Asian does not necessarily mean that they're an enemy of the United States of America. I will also point out that there was a recruited unit of Japanese soldiers who did fight in Europe and did fight with distinction. Also, in our modern time, internment camps can be nests of radicalism, as if Islam isn't already radical enough, and they can be nests of discontent. What we want to do is to bring progressives in with us in recognizing that Islam is a threat. And if we're going to do that, we need to say that one of our stated goals is to remove Islamists from our country, not people with brown skin, okay, because that's what they're going to try and say, oh, well, you just hate Arabs.
No,
we're going to have to remove Islam from our countries. And if someone espouses Islam, then, yes, they're going to need to be shipped off, say, to Saudi Arabia or to some other country that can and will take them. And yes, we're going to have to make hard choices and do that by force if necessary. But as far as internment camps go, no, I'm with Mike on this. I am not for that.
All right. And I'm just reading the chat room, and Luchadora of Radio Jihad Network and Reactionary Speaks Network brought up a really good point. We need to take Islam to court and have it declared a political ideology, so it won't be protected as a religion, because it's much more than a religion. And Luchadora is totally on the money. And she's totally correct, and she's backing up everything that I am espousing. As you guys know, I am involved in a letter-writing campaign here in Canada to Islam de-indexed as a religion. And I am not talking about sending Gmails or emails or anything like that. I am saying that you take your pen and paper and put it in an envelope and mail it to your local politician, your national politicians, your prime minister, your president. Well, you know what? My apologies. It won't get too far with your president. And I was speaking with Noe 90, who has joined us. And Noe 90, hi, and Taking Back America has joined us as well. But Noe 90, I was speaking with him about this, and he said, take it even one step further. get it certified so that they have to sign for it. And when they sign for a registered letter, they have to open it. And this is what I am trying to do with two patriots here in Canada, because I'm fed up. I've had it. And Lion, welcome to the program as well. Thank you for joining us. But, you know, enough is enough. Like, the scourge, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. We are dealing with an entity that is going to destroy us from within. Personally, you two fine gentlemen from the United States, I think that the usurper should be taken out in handcuffs. And I'm going to ask you, Michael, how do you feel about the usurper being taken out of the White House in handcuffs and arrested, never mind impeached?
Well, I mean, he's violated the Constitution in many instances. He continues to trample on it, and unfortunately he will. And he's a very evil man. He is not an American, I don't believe. I don't believe he was born in this country. He was raised a Muslim. His father was a Sunni Muslim. I think he has some Arab descent. He studied the Quran in Jakarta, Indonesia as a child. He's espoused his love for Islam and for, the Muslim world. And he's done so many egregious things. You know, we have laws in this country where it actually is illegal to arm, aid, or abet the enemies of this nation. And these would be terrorist groups that have been, groups that have been classified by the State Department as terrorist entities. And he's done that, of course, with ISIS in Syria. Now he wants to do it again. I don't think anything's going to happen to him. I mean, I'm just being realistic again. He's got about, less than 2 years to serve out in his final term. At this point, I'd be shocked if some proceedings were, taken up to bring him to task, and I don't think that's going to happen. And whether he will actually leave in a year and a half is a questionable thing, too. People speculate he may try to remain, change the term limits, maybe call for martial law. I would say there's a possibility of that happening. I'm not into conspiracy stuff. I reject all that. It's all nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a very diabolical man. He's an evil man. Evil presides within him.
Oh, he's
within his within the marrow of his bones.
Absolutely wicked.
He is evil. And has he violated the laws of this nation of America? Absolutely. There's no question that he has violated many of our laws, and I don't foresee him being held accountable, not in this world anyway.
And I'm going to give Agador the final talking point on that arrestment. What do you think, Agador? Should he face charges of treason, for example?
Well, I think it would make great video. I think everyone would love to see the guy, do the perp walk out of the White House with the cuffs on and all that kind of thing. I think that would give a lot of Americans that his administration has harmed they're the cops, they're doing it now. That would give a lot of Americans a lot of satisfaction. But I think Mike is right. He's got he'll be president sadly until January of 2017, and he's going to be working every day to try and weaken the United States of America and to complete or move along its fundamental transformation into a socialist crap hole. I think that he is evil. Now, I'm not prepared to say that he is an Islamist, but I think that he is definitely an Islamist sympathizer. I think that he's been taken in by a lot of Islamists, and he has completely swallowed the Kool-Aid of the religion of peace and the Islamist victimhood and all of this mess that we know is completely untrue. This is a man who is intelligent, but he is also very influenceable. And his influences have not been those of previous presidents who have had Christian upbringings and things of that nature. Not even an agnostic upbringing. In his family, lots of religions, a lot of it to do with Islam. And I think that has influenced his thinking. And I think what we have to do is do our best, even though I don't see it happening, do our best to try and elect a Congress that might one day have it in them to get him impeached and try and reverse some of these things that he has begun doing. Because if nothing else, we have to work to make sure that we don't have blasphemy laws and Sharia in the United States of America by the time this a-hole leaves office. I really believe that we have to be careful, because if we don't, Sharia could also be on the table by January of 2017, Sharia in all of the United States of America. So, yes, we have to fight as hard as we can to inform as many people as we can, because while I don't believe President Obama will be arrested, I do think he's going to do as much evil as he possibly can before he leaves office, and that will be right up to the last minute. January the 20th,
right.
2017,
oh, yeah.
Baby.
Yeah.
And that's,
well,
that's
yeah,
what I
yeah.
got.
Absolutely.
I gotta
and,
gentlemen, sorry.
I am down to my last 4 minutes of talking points. And, Michael, I want to give you a minute to give us some closing remarks that you want to share.
Well, I want to share some extremely tragic news. These three Israeli young men who were abducted, kidnapped by it was understood to be Hamas or some other Islamist
yes.
terrorist scum.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, it doesn't matter the name. If we say Hamas or we say Fatah or whoever, they're Muslim terrorist scum. So tragically, they found their remains and they were killed,
damn
of course.
It.
So
damn it.
It's
damn
a tough
it.
Situation. I think I wasn't hopeful initially. And it's a tragic outcome. I hope the Israeli government repays them tenfold, a hundredfold, not even tenfold. I hope they repay them a hundredfold. And I'm sure they tortured them. And you can't even conceive of what they went through in the hands of these savages. So three young boys, just because they were Jewish, just because they were Israelis, you know, they never harmed anyone in their life. And that's what happened. So,
For God's sake.
It's tragic news. To say the least.
Can you send me a link later that I will bring this up on either Radio Jihad Network or my Friday show? And
go into the chat room now, Kel.
I can't. I don't want to digress into it. Thank you, Agador. Okay. Okay, I'm lost for words right now. I don't want to expand on it because I'm going to start crying. Agador, what are your closing talking points?
Well, I'm glad Mike brought this up because I wanted to get it in at some time because this is this is breaking news. And I think this show has been very exemplary of the evils of Islam. The caller that called in before, showing the ignorance and brutishness of Islam, and this tragic news story out of Israel, showing these young men, as Mike says, who did harm to no one, who were just students. Kidnapped and killed by these Islamic savages. And I'd just like to say one more time to our progressive friends, guys, the Islamists are not your friends. They will destroy everything you've worked for. If you aren't made aware of that by what has happened on this show, by what we've discussed and what has happened, then you need to clue in. And, Kel, I want to thank you for allowing me to guest host on the show. I hope Tim is having a great time on vacation. And I appreciate it.
I am forever grateful to you, Agador, and Michael, for joining me while Tim is away on vacation. And Tim will be back next Monday. And I'll be flying solo tomorrow night on the Radio Jihad Network, but not quite, because Jeff Mitchell of EDL Radio will be joining me. And we'll also be celebrating Canada Day and the 4th of July. And but I have to go because this is brand new to me, and this is breaking me up.
And you might have a horn in there too, Kel.
Okay. All right. Gentlemen, thank you so very much. Everybody, thank you for joining the Red Fox Blogger today. I really want to thank Michael Green and Agador for keeping me company. Remember, it is mass Islamity, okay? We have to stop the insanity and recognize that Islam is a political entity. Ladies and gentlemen, I will see you tomorrow night on the Radio Jihad Network, and I will see you Friday night at 7 p.m. on the Red Fox Blogger. Good night, everybody.
Keep hope alive.
I know sometimes in life you feel that everything is lost, and that mountain is just too high to climb.
Keep hope alive.
Well, that's when you gotta dig deep down inside and reach that inner strength you never knew you had to give you the will to carry on another day. And all the day goes by and you're outside still wondering why, watching everything you work so hard, and life all begins to fall apart. It breaks your heart to see it all crumbling at the wayside. You wanna lay your head down, pack it in and say goodbye, cause there's nothing left here to keep hope alive. Until you see the only two things in life that really matter. It's a little girl and a little boy. Want your foolish pride, want your beautiful joy. Even what's left of a candy bar when it's like the remains of a Chips Ahoy. Playing with a piece of driftwood that create a little mind made into a beautiful toy. And at that moment you realize you gotta rebuild everything Mother Nature had just destroyed. Their precious little heartbeat gave you the strength of a thousand men. Gave you the will to get back up on your feet again. Because you knew right then this battle wasn't about you, it's all about them, and you reassured them like only a daddy can, and they knew right then that everything was gonna be alright. Some harm's way, putting in all those hours, and all my friends working day and night, making it right here, tunnel of towers, bringing us hope like a ray of sunshine, peeking through the clouds, clearing the showers. Well, here's to you, two shots of whiskey, one Jameson, one Johnny Powers. From Coney Island to Seaside Heights, Long Beach, Freeport, the Lower East Side, Massapequa to Sheepshead Bay, a city out into the Rockaway.